Welcome to another Avcon WOW Aviation Consulting Company podcast hosted by Paul Ritchie. The reason for this and other Avcon produced podcast is to bring interesting and relevant news and information to podcast listeners as to things and issues that matter to the aviation industry. For those of us fortunate enough to be part of this industry, we can say that it is never routine, that all of its participants need to be able to turn on a dime as we navigate through new challenges as they arise. On today's show, we're honored to welcome Ken Eastman, the Director of the Icing Operations at the GTAA at the Toronto Pearson International Airport. Welcome, Ken.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Excellent. So pleased to have you on board, Ken. I know how busy you are, and I think listeners will find today's show to be particularly interesting. So please share a bit of information with listeners as to who Ken Eastman is, your aviation background, and your current role at the Central De-icing Facility.
Okay, so for your listeners, I guess a little background on myself. I began my career in aviation in the mid-80s here at Pearson. Fresh out of college, I'd taken my studies in law enforcement, destined to be a police officer. That was my dream at that time.
Wow.
I had a close friend who had been working at the airport for a couple of years who recommended, hey, well, why don't you come and get a part-time job and see how you like working there while you're still pursuing your other dreams. So I started working for a ground handling company as an aircraft service person out on the ramp, part-time capacity. And soon I started to develop a passion for airside operations. I think what really interested me was the machine that moves these aircraft around. I think a lot of people that are involved with the airport love airplanes, and they love looking at airplanes and the different aspects of aviation. Whereas I think I like to see the logistics and how we support moving these aircraft through an airside operation. So I worked for the ground handling company for several years. I guess you could say I grew organically within the company, taking on different roles. This project for the Central De-icing Facility came up in the late 90s. And the manager I was reporting into at the time really encouraged me to get involved with it. And he said, this is going to be a game changer in the industry. It's something that it would be really good to get involved with. So I was fortunate enough to be a part of the original team that started the Toronto Central De-icing Facility. I was there in operational capacities. I worked a various amount of roles until finally becoming the general manager of the CDF in 2007, I believe it was. So the CDF was operated under a contract to the service provider, the ground handler that I was working at. On behalf of the air carriers and the airport authority. And it was a long-term agreement. So I was responsible for that agreement. During that tenure, I'd say in 2010, I also started to take on another role within the ground handling company for director of Canadian airports for de-icing for the company. And I think that really gave me the opportunity to visit a lot of other airports and understand their practices and how they approached aircraft de-icing. And I was able to share the best practices that we had started in Toronto, as well as learn from some of the practices that they were doing at their airports as well, and bringing that back into our team in Toronto.
Amazing background. I can certainly relate to your sharing about the passion about even moving around aircraft into big machines. I too started the same footsteps on the ramp. And I love towing aircraft and pushing back aircraft. Right. That was the most exciting part.
That's right.
Right? The heavy control of that massive monster, you know, a 747, and getting underneath with the big TM-1800 and pushing that monster back was lots of fun. And so I can relate to your passion in aviation. So as this is a podcast, the listeners can't see what you see as part of your daily responsibilities. Can you share the massive scope and complexity of Canada's largest and most advanced central de-icing facility with the listeners?
So, Paul, our facility in Toronto is probably, I would say, one of the largest and most technologically advanced facilities in the world. The size of the site is, well, when we first opened, it was 65 acres. I've clawed some additional real estate to that, so we could say 65, 66 acre site. And it's centered in the middle of five runways at Pearson. And we have the ability to process up to 500 aircraft in a single day, depending on the type of weather that we're dealing. 2019, the peak of aviation, we were probably operating 48 de-icing vehicles and had a staff of almost 200 employees supporting the operation. So it just kind of gives you the idea of the size of it. Each of our de-icing pads, so we have six composite de-icing pads. They're all equal size and equal width in length, too. Each pad is capable of doing one wide-body aircraft or two narrow-body aircraft, while an additional wide-body or two narrow-body are staged in behind waiting to come in. So this takes a lot of the inventory off the airfield and still leaves our taxiways open for an airside operation to keep moving in the field. We utilize various software systems. We have messaging boards to ensure that aircraft follow the correct lead-in lines. We have closed-circuit televisions to be able to monitor our equipment around the aircraft and ensure our operators are safe. And all of this is done with the aircraft engines running.
So that also includes the gigantic A380?
Yes, we do the A380 as well. We have a 6 or an 8 truck pattern that we utilize on the A380.
Wow, that must be pretty exciting to see this big monster come in and needs to be the ice, such a massive wing and fuselage.
Yes. Yes, I think when we were training our team on it, we were remarking that the one wing was the similar size of a 737 when you're spraying it.
Wow. It is. Certainly. That sort of puts it into perspective, as to the vast area that you have to de-ice on that particular aircraft. So many say that the industry has changed a lot over the past decade or so. What has changed when it comes to de-icing operations at the CDF from a practical and operational perspective?
That's an interesting question. From a practical and operational perspective, I would say that growth has been the key driver in the last decade. It's caused us to look at our operational strategies, find out how we can optimize the current footprint that we had established in the late 1990s. And what we did there was increase the resources that we had on it. We also recognized that the composition of aircraft that we're dealing with, it's gotten larger. What used to be a wing now has winglets and scimitars. So the surfaces that we're treating have become larger. So we expanded by increasing the fleet, changing some of our training, our techniques, our patterns, and used different operational approaches. So that was enabled us to reduce de-icing times, use the same footprint that we were on, but still be able to process aircraft in a timely manner through the facility.
So let me ask this question. The length of a 787-8 is similar to a 767-300ER. Is it similar for de-icing purposes, or is there a difference when you have to de-ice a 787 versus a 767? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, it is. And it's funny because we're measured on our times and by our class of aircraft. So these aircraft will all fall into the same class, but if we're into a heavy contamination and we're spraying fuselages in the whole aft section, it's going to take longer to spray those types of aircraft. They are larger. We've seen that.
Now, is the wing area any bigger between the 767 and the 787?
I would say the 787 is larger, yes.
Yeah, I've heard it's quite substantial. Toronto Pearson Airport is seen by many in the industry as a trailblazer when it comes to the environment. And by its very nature, glycol is not friendly to the environment if not managed. How are spent fluids managed at the CDF today?
So we have a quite an elaborate collection system at CDF, considering the year that that the facility was built. And I still think there's other airports that strive to build a collection system that was put in place in Toronto. The whole site, the 65-acre site, is lined with a geomembrane that ensures glycol can't penetrate the natural environment below. We have a whole subdrain system, as well as a collection system. Our pads are sloped with a 2-degree slope, very gradual slope. You can hardly see it with your eyes. That forces the flow of the fluid southward in each bay that goes into catch basins, which is collected through the pipelines into diversion vaults. Within the diversion vaults, then we can sample the fluid that we've collected through a lab that we have in our building. And then we can activate valves underground and isolate the fluids based on the blends that we've tested to in various storage tanks that we have underground. I think right now we've got the capacity to store just over 18 million liters of contaminated fluids underground at CDF in Toronto.
Now, are you in the process of making that bigger?
We just have expanded on it. So we've just included a new 5.5 million liter capacity tank that has provided us with a lot more flexibility. So now we're able to convert that tank to collect higher concentrated fluid, lower concentrated fluid, and it provides us with flexibility with the existing infrastructure that we had previously.
Wow, that's amazing. Amazing. Have the fluids used in the de-icing process evolved over the years? If so, how? And what recommendations would you have, if any, to glycol suppliers as to potential improvements or enhancements to their fluids that would further improve the overall de-icing and anti-icing process?
So, Paul, I would say that the de-icing process has evolved over the years. I think the core part of it remains similar. It's how the fluids that we use have changed. So when we first began de-icing, we were using what was called a type 1 XL54, which was a pre-mixed fluid.
Yes.
So essentially, we were paying to truck, you want to say 50 or 46% of water with each shipment to the CDF. And I think I guess it was around 2004, we had the realization that if we started to blend and make our own percentages of type 1 fluid, it would give us better flexibility in warmer temperatures. We wouldn't be spraying at such a high concentrated glycol because it wasn't required at the warmer temperatures, mitigating some of our impacts on the environment. As well as it gave us the ability to double our inventory. So essentially what we did was we switched to a concentrate version in Toronto, brought in 3 blenders, and were able to blend on site. I would say the industry also, from a type 1 perspective, is going to the point where the trucks that we utilize to de-ice aircraft will soon be able to blend. Well, they do blend on board. In Toronto, we are working towards changing that our whole fleet to being able to blend day of for the outside air temperature to deliver to the aircraft at a lower blend of concentration. So it'll help increase our storage capacity as well as reduce our impact on the environment.
And also to reduce the cost to the airlines, less glycol being used.
Absolutely. From a type 4 perspective, we've switched the type 4, the original type 4 fluid that we had on site, and we've gone to a newer one that is a lot more vibrant in color. So from a de-icing specialist perspective, and when applying the fluids, it's a lot easier to ensure that they're covering all the surfaces correctly. So I think that those were some strides made in the industry that has really helped our guys when it comes to treating aircraft. What was it? And the second part of your question was, Paul?
I think it was basically, if you had the ability to change anything in fluids on to go forward, What type of recommendations or wish lists would you have for changes in the de-icing, anti-icing fluids, if any, at this point?
Well, I appreciate the coloring and ensuring that fluids are key in their colors. It helps the end users. It would obviously be nice to see a formula that had a more environmentally friendly impact, but still had the parameters available that the ethylene glycol-based fluid that we use now has from a lowest operational use temperature perspective. That would be nice to see. I often wonder this because we're exploring the ability to recycle, create a closed loop process, and it's going to cause significant dollars to do this. So that's where I wonder if someone came out with environmentally friendly fluid, what would happen if we were to establish this whole recycling process?
Yeah, so I should say
It's
a closed
interesting.
loop. Be very interesting. Yes, very, very interesting. The very act of de-icing and anti-icing under ideal conditions is a carefully scripted process. What tools or equipment or training processes do you deploy to help facilitate a smooth and safe operation?
So in Toronto, we use a specialized de-icing truck that has a extended boom that actually reaches over top of the surfaces of the aircraft. So all 46 of our de-icing units are the same. So that helps from a training perspective, but also from a training perspective for our de-icing specialists, they would undergo at least 6 weeks of training. So 2 weeks of theory, 2 weeks of practical. Then there's some mentoring with experienced de-icing specialists. And then what we would do is do a ride-along process with them. So there's some checks and balances that need to be performed and observed from them before we will certify and qualify them to be operating the one-man trucks on their own around live aircraft. So there's quite a bit of training involved with them. Our de-icing movement coordinators who control or orchestrate the movement of the aircraft and the movement of the resources around the aircraft, they undergo months of training and will be mentored and I guess observed for, I would say generally it's at least one active season of de-icing to ensure that they're qualified in their role as well.
Wow.
So they're utilizing all of these bait management software systems, cameras that we've put in place. So there's, all of those systems have some functionality built into them to ensure that there's safeguards built in there to ensure that you don't move an aircraft unless you're able to.
So you mentioned some of the different tools that are available to be able to see what's going on. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, it's a 65 acres in size, and you've got six pads. You can have up to six wide bodies or 12 narrow bodies or any combination thereof, plus an equinum of aircraft and staging. And it's snowing like crazy. And the visibility falls. How do you maintain operational situation awareness at all times to keep everybody safe and to maintain efficient operations when you're operating in the middle of a heavy snowstorm?
Yeah, and I think, Paul, I think a lot of that comes from our training. So we've established corrugated patterns, procedures. If someone were to deviate from those, it becomes evident. You would understand it visually. You would understand it through radio communications if people are not following the proper process through the proper protocols through the process. We also have CCTV cameras that can support us. If we're in lower visibilities, we have a process for a double safe call. We put built-in measures to be able to essentially operate the facility in the dark with the lights off, just through our day-to-day patterns and our simulations. We conduct simulations with our team on just preparing for these types of events as well.
That's amazing, and it's a real credit to you and your team that you're able to maintain such efficient operations even when visibility drops because of your practices and techniques. So, For an operation as large as Toronto Pearson, and I touched on it briefly earlier, a lot of glycol is used. What do you do with your spent fluids? You mentioned earlier, of course, they are collected in the stream and they're stored. Then what? Do you recycle them, or are they disposed of, or what do you do with your fluids once they are collected?
So our current practice right now is generally what we do with spent fluids that are, I want to say, less than 3% contaminated with glycol. And we collect that in some larger underground storage tanks. The fluid that is higher than 3% glycol, we collect into separate storage tanks, and we feed a glycol processing facility that is located on site at the CDF. It's operated by a third party that processes the spent fluid and brings it back to a 50% ethylene glycol-based product. From there, they work with aftermarket and they sell the fluid off for additional processing in other locations. Our lower concentrated fluids are sent through the sanitary systems, and we need to make sure that we abide by the current BOD allotments that we are allowed to release to the sanitary systems on. We're fortunate in Toronto that we are able to send it to the City of Toronto's treatment plant as well as the region of Peel's treatment plant. So that is a benefit for us. And I think I talked about it earlier. So what we're actually looking at right now and is exploring the opportunities of being able to perhaps process all of the fluids on site, creating a closed loop process and understanding what is involved.
That's amazing, and one day it'd be perhaps you had to put it back on the airplane, to your point, right? So it's a closed
That's
loop.
right. That's right. And that's where we're looking at our other airport partners.
Yes.
Some other Canadian airports have recently started that initiative. So Toronto has always been a leader, and we've always shared how we've grown through this business. But I think this time there's an opportunity for us to watch someone else lead in this area and for us to take the best practices that they're learning from. So that's kind of the direction that we're heading.
Well, it's wonderful to see the form of cooperation amongst the airports, right? This is a shared opportunity and need, and how can we help each other for mutual benefit? So that's an excellent example for others to follow. So for your many years of experience, what one type of winter weather presents the greatest challenge to the overall de-icing process at the CDF, and how do you combat this weather condition?
There's a question. So I would say, because we've dealt with some extreme blizzards in Toronto, we've dealt with thundersnow, microcyclonic disturbances. I would say though that the one thing, Paul, that I probably would have a problem leaving the facility is when we're in a freezing rain event. It's the impact of freezing rain events. Understanding accretion rates, and when we get into the lower temperatures in freezing rain, I think those are the difficult events to deal with, and managing the expectations of our airline customers and managing the expectations of our own team that's working out there. I think those are some unique events that are difficult to deal with. I know it's sitting on the operations side. We're often asked when we have a forecast for events like that, how much fluid do you have? You're going to have enough fluid to spray all of our planes. We're going to be able to. And what I don't think is what people understand is I need to collect all that.
Yes,
So
because it's so vastly diluted, right? Just for the rain, yes.
I think there was a March a couple of years ago where over a 16-hour period, I think we dispensed close to 1 million liters of Type 1 on probably over 425 aircraft.
Wow,
And we need to
staggering.
capture all of we need to
Yeah.
capture all of that at the same time. And it's being able to manage both of those. And it's exciting. It's exciting. We're being challenged by it. But I do freezing rain events are concerning for me. Those are the ones that
Yes, as you said, it's challenging from the overall efficiency, safety, and then also the sheer volume of fluids you have to collect and to discharge before the next winter event arrives. You know, it's not as if you have lots of time. It could start snowing again in 24 hours. Then what, right? So.
Yeah, and much of our job is not looking in the moment that we're in. It's more looking at the forecast and where we're going to be hours and days away.
Yeah, to make sure that you're ready for it. So, if an airport operator would come to you asking for advice to build a central de-icing facility, how would you respond in high-level terms to this question?
I've had the luxury to go out and see other de-icing facilities in Canada, North America, in the world, in Europe as well. And I think that what we've established in Toronto it's the core of what is required. What I would do to build a central de-icing facility, I would look at what we did in Toronto, perhaps expand our bays to make them an 8-truck bay, giving us two codes, sorry, being able to do two code Cs but with 4 trucks on each, and expediting de-icing times. I think Toronto really set a good benchmark out there, and it's just building on what we have in Toronto. Think
Because
it's.
I sense many airlines and airports, even to this day, still come to visit you to see this marvel we have at Toronto Pearson. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And things like we have truck fills on our pads where a lot of other remote facilities haven't done
Yes.
that. Could we elaborate on that and have hydro out on our pads to keep our trucks plugged in there to reduce fuel? Yes, we could. So I think a lot of the bones of the model that we have in Toronto are very strong, and we could just elaborate a little bit on what we have in Toronto.
So the last question for you, Ken. If you could do it all over again from day one, what would you change? What would you do different?
So is that a crystal ball and a big bag of money? Is that what you're after?
Well, if you could do it all over again, I mean, it's how you want to view it.
I think being in the role that I'm in now, I think I was fortunate to have leadership before me that I learned from. It's interesting that we go through de-icing events and we have debriefs and what could we do differently and how can we do it differently. And I think a lot of times we don't go back and look to the people that are actually working out there and the people who have led it in the past and understand those are lessons learned, not just from the one event, but the people who have done this before can teach us so much. And I'm trying to take that away myself, as you know, I start to get near the end of the runway as well, is sharing the information that I have to understand what is needed for the future. Because I think it's difficult to sit here right now and say, okay, well, I'd like to build an 8-truck pad, but I don't know what the aircraft types are going to be 20 years from now, 25 years from now. But what I do would say is you need to build a facility that is well ahead of where you think you're going to be. It needs to be able to be grown into. It needs to be scalable, because the airline aviation is just going to continue to grow, and it's being able to adapt to that when it does.
Yeah, because aircraft design can change. I mean, if you use different type of fuel, I mean, I've seen some drawings that talk about a whole new type of wing structure
Yes.
that could demand a change as to the space they need, or the turning radius, or how the fluid is applied, or how it may or may not flow off the aircraft. I guess they're all factors you have to take into account. Would you not say that's true?
Absolutely. We're currently looking at the 777X and how we're going to treat it with the folding wing.
Yeah.
And we have a process, we've got a procedure, so I think we have a concept that will work. But it's ensuring that the facility can fit that aircraft as well.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you, Ken, for joining us today, and also to all the listeners who were heard this podcast. We encourage you to stay tuned for future podcasts, and have a wonderful day, and thank you for taking part.